To Trust the Guard by Triden. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Introduzioni. Niall gasped awake, chest heaving. She looked wildly around the hold of the cargo plane and her eyes landed on Booker. He was propped up between two wooden crates like he was some kind of house cat, known for sleeping in bizarre positions. Niall actually had a cat like that growing up. His name had been Boozer because he always walked just a little bit crooked and passed out dead asleep in various twisted positions that frankly defied several laws of the natural world. He had been a ginger-colored, long-haired tabby Niall and her brother had found in an alley on their way home from school one day. They had begged their mother to keep him, and she had caved with hardly any resistance. Niall tilted her head slightly at the man, who had jolted awake and was now heaving for breath like he hadn't had fresh air in years. There was a striking resemblance between Booker and Boozer. Andy charging back from the front of the plane, where Niall was sure she had been hovering menacingly over the pilot's shoulder, broke Niall out of her wandering thoughts and focused her attention back to what had woken her up in the first place. Shouting, searing too bright sun. A gasp of fresh air. Glorious, beautiful oxygen. She's out. Andy whirled on Booker, sharp words ready on the tip of her tongue. Niall could tell the woman was still a stranger, but Niall had always been able to read people pretty fast. Joe and Nikki got her out. At Booker's rushed words, Andy abruptly threw an arm straight out to the side to brace herself against the wall of the plane. Relief sagged through her, and every scrap of tension and stress left her body, like a puppet with its strings cut. Slowly, the most beautiful smile spread across her lips, exposing perfect white teeth in a radiance that had Niall seriously glad that she had already known herself to be bi. Niall thanked boot camp for clarifying that fact for her. Apparently, strong, dangerous, badass women did it for her. In her men, Niall tended to prefer tall, physically strong, but emotionally sensitive types. And without her permission, Niall's eyes strayed back to the bedraggled Frenchman, crammed into a corner there was no way his 6'2" broad frame should have ever been able to fit in. "Who's out?" Niall asked, trying to turn her focus off of her libido. Not her fault, but what the hell? Why did they both have to be hot? And back onto the matter at hand. "Her name is Quinn. She's one of us, the first immortal Andy found." Booker paused, and both he and Niall looked up at Andy. Andy gave them a tight smile and nodded at Booker to continue. They had both been alone so long before they found each other that Quinn had given up. Way back before Joe had shown up. It was just the two of them. Booker hesitated again and stared imploringly up at Andy, pain and sympathy crossing his features as he regarded her. "She and I ran through the world together and fought thousands of battles side by side. She was always right there with me." Andy paused, a small smile on her lips as she closed her eyes, as if she was drawing up a fond memory. "She was a pit viper in a fight." Niall had the question, "What happened?" on the tip of her tongue, but Booker's subtle shake of his head stilled her. "We were in England, freeing so-called heretics from the witch trials, but then we were accused of being witches ourselves, and we were caught. When we didn't die and only prove their case, and we got sentenced again and again. We were killed in dozens of different ways, but it was fine, because at least we were still together." Andy's eyes squeezed shut as the agony of those memories swamped her. Niall felt her stomach drop in sympathy. "I guess the executioners saw it too. They said we were too powerful together. They dragged her away from me in chains and locked her in an iron coffin." Andy drew in a shuddery breath, a tear streaking down her cheek, and Niall hurriedly wiped at her own cheeks, clearing away the tears that had started falling steadily. "I watched her get pulled away, screaming and begging for mercy, crying my name." Andy paused to scrub a hand over her face, and Booker softly continued the story where she had left off. After Andy escaped, she met up with Joe, and they spent decades searching for her, or anyone on that ship who could tell them where she was cast off. "I've lived with the guilt ever since," Andy said, in a hushed whisper almost too soft for Niall to hear. "It's my fault that she'd been captured. And it's my fault she's been stuck down there for so long." Niall didn't even know what to say. She could barely comprehend the story she was being told, the pain and despair and longing that they had all gone through. "That's the reason we all dread capture." Niall looked over at Booker's soft, rough whisper. "Spend eternity trapped in a cage." After that frankly terrifying statement, the three of them were silent for a long time. Niall processed the information, but in the end, she decided she needed more answers to make sense of it. "Why? Why us?" Booker raised both eyebrows like, "Good question," but responded with a trace of amusement in his voice. "That way madness lies." Niall rolled her eyes at the oh-so-helpful non-answer. She tried another one. "What were the dreams, the flashes of pictures? I saw you and Andy before we ever met. I saw Joe and Nikki." At Booker's nod of confirmation, Niall continued, "I saw the woman, Quinn, trapped underwater. She was smiling, though. Why? Why wouldn't she be crazy if she's been down there all these years? I would be." "Over 500 years in a box at the bottom of the ocean would make anyone insane," Booker agreed. Niall barely held back the exasperated look she so desperately wanted to give the man. He was just so helpful. The amused glint in his eye and the twitch of his lips told Niall that he was enjoying irritating her, and she just narrowed her eyes at him until he decided to be helpful. He held out for another second before caving with a chuckle. "I've been dreaming of Quinn on and off for 200 years. For the first 160 years, yeah, she was insane. She was furious and desperate and resentful. I could feel her pain. I could feel her insanity." "She's not that way now. What changed?" Niall asked almost hesitantly. Booker smiled, a fond little thing. The lines around his eyes crinkled, and that told Niall that he smiled often enough that their so-called healing factor couldn't keep up with the laugh lines. "Nikki did. We found Nikki in 1980. He started talking to Quinn in his dreams almost right away." Niall stared at Booker in straight-up disbelief. "Wait. You can actually talk to her?" Booker's amused little smirk told Niall that she had heard him correctly. "How come I just saw flashes?" Niall demanded, and Booker's amused smirk turned into a rueful little smile. "I did too, for over a century. She was angry and insane, and all I felt was her pain and fury and her drowning over and over again. It was a lot, and I admittedly hid from her. I tried to bury the emotions under alcohol, and I was pretty successful for decades. It wasn't until Nikki figured out how to actually communicate with her that her rage subsided enough that I could see more than flashes. And eventually, Quinn crossed the line between us herself, and we could speak, so to say, in longer flashes. It's kind of like the old reels on a movie that has colors, and you can feel each other's emotions, but it had no sound. It's easier and clearer to read with calmer emotions on both sides. If you or Andy didn't know how to talk through the dreams, how on earth did Nikki figure that out?" Niall asked, gobsmacked. Booker huffed out a laugh, and Andy, who'd been content to sit back and let Booker answer all of Niall's questions, actually snorted. "You haven't met Nikki yet, but don't be fooled by his quiet, sweet demeanor. The man used to be a feral little shit, clever and wicked smart, but completely fucking unhinged." Niall raised both of her eyebrows, and Booker nodded quickly at her unvoiced question. "Nikki was the head of the Italian mafia in the 1970s. He would have just as soon as killed you as looked at you." Niall's eyes practically bugged out of her head. You said he used to be, but he's better now, right? Wimbooker shrugged nonchalantly. Andy rolled her eyes and tried to reassure Niall. Well, Joe has been working on it with him for the last few decades, but he's still a little... Andy lifted her hand and tipped it side to side in the classic wishy-washy gesture. Intense and creepy are the words you're looking for, boss, Booker added. Niall sat back against the wall in a stunned silence. She was joining a group of crazy people. It was nightfall when the plane landed outside of the city limits of Odessa, Ukraine. Niall was almost depressed about not getting to explore the city and the amazing architecture it was known for, as Andy hustled both her and Booker into a newer model car from the rental agency close to the private airfield they had landed in. She shared with Niall the stories of how she had been there when the city was just a small trading town with barely two bars and an inn. But as fascinating as the story was, it struck Niall hard that this was what her new life was, passing through, just watching the world change around her. It all felt too big. It felt like too much. Niall must have been quiet for too long because Booker reached into the back seat and tapped her knee. You okay? Niall just hummed in response. Get some rest. Andy and I will take turns driving. With any luck, we'll meet the others at the safe house in Warsaw by mid-morning. We should be across the border into Poland before dawn. Niall nodded her agreement, stuffed her jacket under her head, and slept. Niall's dreams were simple, and for that she was grateful. The setting looked like a loft-style apartment that Niall had seen in Chicago. Not the higher-end lofts, but the ones that had been converted from the old warehouses downtown. It was spacious and open, and had no walls separating any of the rooms except the bathroom. The bedroom flowed into the living space, where a pull-out couch held ruffled bedsheets and a quilt that had been thrown back. The living room opened into a moderate-sized kitchen with modern appliances. The curtains were drawn shut, but Niall could still see the glow of a streetlight through them. It cast a warmth around the room during the pre-dawn hours. In one corner of the large space, on what looked like a king-size bed on a floating frame, were three intertwined figures. The petite figure in the middle had to be Quinn. On either side of her, curled around her protectively, were Joe and Nikki. The wave of safety and contentment that resonated off the three of them was comforting and reassuring. Niall smiled in her sleep and allowed herself to drift deeper into a dreamless slumber. It was, in fact, mid-morning and sunny by the time Andy, Booker, and Niall rolled into the parking space in front of the large converted warehouse. There were plenty of other cars parked in the spaces to either side of them, so Niall took some comfort in not being stuck in the middle of nowhere. They all got out of the car and stretched out the kinks from being cramped in first the cargo plane and then the car for the last day. Booker winked at her as he stepped up to her. Don't get used to the modern digs. This is Joe and Nikki's place, and we won't stay here long. Just a few days to come up with a game plan. Andy stepped up beside them with a bag in each hand. We'll head somewhere else with more room. Probably Booker's farmhouse in Canada. There are more than enough bedrooms there, and we won't have to be on top of each other. Booker scoffed playfully at her. More like you want to have a reunion with Quinn in the biblical sense. Andy flung one of the bags to him for him to carry, and then whacked him upside the head with her palm. Booker just snickered and hunched over to protect himself from the assault. Niall smiled at their antics, grabbed her own bag, and followed them inside. It was Nikki who opened the door. His bright eyes held a hawk-like intensity, but when they settled on Andy, they visibly softened. Even though his expression didn't really change, his whole being, his whole presence relaxed, and he looked impossibly warm and welcoming. Andy hugged him without hesitation, one of her hands coming up to cradle the back of his head. They separated, and Nikki moved to the side to let them all pass by him. when Niall slipped in after Booker, Andy was being spun around joyfully by Joe. From the smile on her face and the lack of tension in her body, this seemed to be a common occurrence. It was nice to see the stressed woman so relaxed and happy. Niall felt a gentle hand on the small of her back. She turned her head to look into the smiling eyes of Nikki. How the man could so clearly display his emotions in his eyes, without any outward demonstration, was so unique and different. Booker had been right when he had called Nikki intense. "Come, sit. You've had a long few days." Joe came bounding over to them, wrapped an arm around Niall's shoulders, and guided her into a chair at the kitchen table. It had six mismatched chairs crammed around it, and Niall had a feeling that Joe and Nikki had rushed out first thing to find the extra chairs so that she and Quinn felt welcome. Niall couldn't help but relax into Joe's affectionate embrace. It made her feel safe and welcome, like she hadn't felt since the last time she hugged her mother goodbye at the airport. When Niall sat with Booker on one side and Joe on the other side, she looked over to where Andy and Quinn were still locked in a tight embrace. There were tears streaking down both women's cheeks, and they were whispered words in a language that Niall couldn't make out. Joe reached over and nudged Niall. She dragged her gaze away from the emotional reunion to give Joe her full attention. "It's a mix of ancient dead languages that only the two of them know." "You've never asked?" Joe tilted one side of his mouth up as he looked at Niall with a fondness that she knew she would soon reciprocate. "No, it's theirs alone. You spend thousands of years with someone, and I'd say you earned the right to a secret language." "How about you and Nikki? Do you have a secret language?" Joe's eyes, already soft with affection for Niall, absolutely melted when he turned his head to look at Nikki. The Italian man had just finished setting a glass down in front of everyone and had taken a seat next to Booker. Nikki's eyes sparkled. The two of them honestly looked like anime characters when they stared at each other like that. "Booker explained to you about Quinn?" Nikki's direct question somehow didn't shock Niall. He seemed very straightforward to her. "No, it was mostly Andy." Nikki tilted his head at that, like what Niall had said was an interesting tidbit of information. Joe, on the other hand, looked completely shocked. "Andy told you the story?" Niall nodded slowly at Joe's inquiry. Nikki's mouth curled upward just a little when he smiled at her, and Niall got the feeling that he was very pleased. When he spoke, it was in his beautiful, lilting Italian accent. "It is because we found Quinn. Memories are easier to relive and speak out loud when there is a happy ending." God, Niall could listen to him speak all day long and never grow tired of it. She should ask him if he'd ever consider making a podcast or narrating books on audio. Niall looked back at the two women, and they looked like they were separating rather reluctantly. The two women took the open seats, Andy next to Joe and Quinn next to Nikki. When they seemed settled, Niall couldn't have stopped her flood of questions, even if she had tried. "Why did I dream of you all?" Joe opened his mouth to answer, but Nikki cut in. "I believe we were meant to find each other." He was staring at Joe intently as he said it, and Niall caught the ridiculously soft wink Joe sent back at him. Nikki looked at Niall while he continued, "It's like destiny." Nikki looked over at Andy and Quinn. Quinn reached out to touch his face almost reverently. Nikki took her hand in his and tucked their intertwined fingers onto his thigh under the table. "More like misery loves company," Booker quipped, raising his mug of coffee to his lips. Around the table, there were various smiles, rolled eyes, and Andy throwing a bread roll at him. "How old is everyone? How long did it take to find everyone?" Booker jumped in to answer her. "Nikki was the last in 1980. Was it love at first sight? The little girl inside Niall that still loved Disney movies just had to know." She looked between Joe and Nikki, impatiently waiting for one of them to tell her. Joe motioned between he and Nikki with a chuckle. We killed each other. There was laughter in Nicky's eyes, and a secret little smirk on his face when he volleyed back with, "Many times, yeah." Next to her, Booker snorted into his drink as if the apparently understated little inside joke would never get old. Nicky brought them all back to Niall's original question. "Booker was before that, 1812. Niall looked at the Frenchman in astonishment. Booker chuckled, seemingly embarrassed to admit how he had come to die. "Yeah, I died fighting with Napoleon." Niall's eyes were so wide she didn't think that they'd ever go back into her head. "I died in the Crusades, stabbed through the gut by a fucking Italian Catholic priest with a giant red cross on his armor." The look Joe shot at Nicky just screamed sass with a capital S. The Italian man just smirked slowly back at his lover, like the devil himself couldn't catch his tongue. "The love of my life makes a habit of getting stabbed by large swords, wielded by Italian Catholic men." Niall actually spewed her drink out across the table at the sexual innuendo. As she covered her mouth and tried to recover from Nicky's dirty joke, the man looked far, far too pleased with himself. Her eyes landed on Quinn. The petite woman looked absolutely luminous when she smiled at Niall. "Hello, Niall." Her dark gaze fixed to the right of Niall. "It's good to finally meet you, Booker." Booker cleared his throat, his eyes suspiciously wet as he nodded his return sentiment. When Quinn's gaze moved back to Niall, Niall blurted out a question before she could stop herself. "How old are you?" Quinn looked to the ceiling as if pondering the answer. She raised the hand that had previously been held in Nicky's. Niall noted that Quinn had yet to move her other hand out of her lap, and she had a feeling that if the table were not blocking her view, Niall would see it wrapped tightly in Andy's. And she tapped the tips of her fingers on her chin in a rhythm that made it seem like she was actually counting. 3,000 years. Give or take a few centuries." Niall's jaw dropped open. Quinn just sent her a saucy little wink. "I look good for my age, no?" Niall couldn't respond. She just closed her eyes and shook her head like maybe she could shake some semblance of order back into her world. When she opened her eyes back up, she turned them pleadingly on Andy, silently begging the woman to just give it to her straight and not throw another curveball at Niall. Andy's mouth lifted at one corner. It wasn't quite a smirk, but Niall braced herself for what was coming anyway. "Old." "How old?" Niall practically begged. "Too old," Andy responded in literally the vaguest way she could have, and Niall should have known Andy wouldn't give her an actual straight answer. "Andy is the grumpy old lady of the group," Joe said, snickering under his breath. Andy made an affronted noise, but Nicky was quick to add in his input. "It's true, Niall." "I am not," Andy insisted, pointing an accusatory finger first at Joe and then at Nicky. It was Booker, though, who hammered the last nail into her coffin. "Wasn't it the safe house in Thailand where you yelled at that kid to get off our lawn?" Shouts in multiple languages and loud laughter echoed in the kitchen when Andy lunged up from the table and darted toward Booker. If he hadn't anticipated her move and scrambled backwards, she would have caught him in a headlock. As Niall watched two old immortals play catch me if you can around the kitchen table, with shouts and howling laughter from every one of their little family, she couldn't help but feel the wave of happiness wrap around her. She still had a lot of unanswered questions and concerns, and she still missed her mom and brother like a missing limb. But for the first time since she had her throat cut open and felt her blood drain out of her body, Niall felt content and confident that she could belong with this little mismatched family. Somehow, something in her heart of hearts, Niall knew they'd do everything in their power to keep her safe, and she truly felt like she'd do the very same, or she'd die trying. Chapter 2. Piano di Gioco. They'd been in Canada now for almost 6 months. Andy had been right about Booker's farmhouse. It sat nestled at the back of 100 acres of dense overgrown woods on a dirt road with the closest neighbors 5 miles away and the nearest little town more than an hour. The large colonial-style house technically had 6 bedrooms, though they only occupied 4 of them. Nikki and Joe had claimed the second largest room, mostly for the bank of windows that overlooked the little pond, garden, and woods behind the house. The garden had been hideously overgrown and neglected, and Niall had spent many afternoons helping Nikki put it into some kind of order. They had a lot of fun with the scythes and torches to cut and burn the weeds away. It was hard not to notice Nikki's manic glee at handling the flamethrower, but Niall said nothing and chose to stand very far away. In the end, after some truly back-breaking work, the garden turned out to be primarily a vegetable patch with herb plants scattered throughout. But Quinn had insisted they keep the wild climbing roses that had invaded the archway over the path that led to the house. From her spot in the middle of the budding green beans, Niall looked up the path to the house and let her eyes scale the old brick house. She could easily see Joe through the windows of their bedroom at his easel painting, and when she looked back and caught Nikki darting glances up toward Joe every so often, Niall wasn't even surprised. Really, the two of them weren't subtle. And truth be told, Andy and Quinn weren't any better. Nikki and Joe were like one of Niall's beloved Disney movies. They may have been some sword fights and a couple of close calls, but she knew the story would always end sweet and happy for everyone involved, with the villain defeated in the end. Andy and Quinn, on the other hand, were an action thriller movie. They used sparring and verbal taunting as foreplay. Quinn always kept a running commentary with an impish glint in her eyes, and Andy mostly just clenched her jaw and tried not to rise to the bait. But Niall could tell that most times it didn't work. Niall had tried not to stick around past the 10-minute mark of any practice spar they had, because after that, the UST tended to get too uncomfortable for any innocent bystanders to witness. The two of them had claimed the master bedroom because apparently Quinn was in love with the large whirlpool jacuzzi in the master bath. The woman was, shockingly enough, not scared or traumatized by water. Being captured, yes. Ropes or chains or tight spaces alone, yes. Water she absolutely loved. Booker had cloistered himself into the little bedroom that attached to the library through a small sitting room. A set of double doors on both sides of the little room opened to his bedroom on one side and the library on the other. The sitting room had a cozy fireplace, a couple of large cushy armchairs, and Booker's desk with all of his computer gear. The library had high ceilings and a half loft on one side with floor-to-ceiling shelves and books filling every available space. The room was straight out of Beauty and the Beast, just not nearly as big and cavernous. It was honestly Niall's favorite room in the house. She usually met Booker in the sitting room for a cup of coffee in the mornings. He always made it with a French press, and Niall was hopelessly addicted to it. Niall found herself spending more and more time in there, leafing through the incredibly rare and old books like they were made of glass. Booker always had a few stacks sitting on the little side tables, their pages marked with scraps of ribbon. Niall found it ridiculously endearing. The mini rant he went on about creasing the pages and putting pressure on the spines when Niall suggested actual bookmarks was also endearing. On his desk, he had his laptop, a few other computers, scanners, printers, and so many other pieces of technology that Niall didn't even know the name of, much less what they did. Thankfully, the desk itself was a huge, ornate monstrosity of a thing and made out of oak. It was sturdy and apparently built in the late 1800s. Booker had found it a few decades ago when they had first dreamed of and went to retrieve Nikki. It had been handcrafted in Italy and built for both beauty and longevity. He had it bought and shipped to Canada before they left. Every time someone commented on how gorgeous it was, Booker could only roll his eyes at the smug look on Nikki's face, like the Italian man had anything to do with his craftsmanship. That desk was where Booker was sitting when he made a choked-off noise in the back of his throat. Niall had been lost in a book on early 16th-century artists during the Italian Renaissance. Niall swore she saw Joe's likeness in several of the lesser-known paintings Michelangelo had done, but the descriptions and history behind those paintings were vague, and the man had been unnamed. She had grown comfortable with the gentle hum of the computers and the quiet tapping of Booker's fingers on the keyboard, so the choking noise took her attention off of the book quickly. "Booker?" He shook his head, grabbed his phone, and pressed a key. "Boss, I need you to grab the others and come to the library." "Yeah, she's with me." Booker hung up, blew out a breath, and ran his hands through the long strands of his hair. "Booker?" Niall asked again, and this time he looked up at her, tension radiating from his body. It all screamed bad news and lifted the little hairs on the back of Niall's neck. In the next second, the rest of their group filled the room. "We have a problem, boss." Andy's expression pinched and she nodded a go on at him. "Copley's resurfaced, and he's been trying to dig up dirt on us. Our histories, our travel patterns, our financials. He's trying to locate us." Andy scowled at the news. "Why now? We skipped out on that job in South Sudan and haven't contacted him since." Booker scrubbed both hands over his face. "I don't know, boss, but he's in England. That much I do know. I did some digging, and I also found his name on the roster of attendees at a fundraising event for Merrick Pharmaceuticals. And I think we all know what that means." "Fuck," Andy spat. And Quinn's hand on her forearm was probably the only reason why there wasn't one of Booker's priceless first edition books through the window. "He knows about us." Nikki's question came out more as a statement than anything else. Booker shrugged in response. "I think it's safe to say he knows something. What the extent of his knowledge is, I have no clue." "So what do we do?" Joe asked as he came to stand by Niall's chair. "We find Copley. We have to pinch this off." "No." Quinn cut into Andy's sharp orders. Andy spun toward her quickly. "What do you mean, no?" Quinn smiled slow and wide, like a Cheshire cat that just got the canary. "What better way to find out what they want than by allowing them to escort us personally into the heart of their headquarters?" Slow realization dawned on Niall. "A Trojan horse." Quinn grinned maniacally at Niall before turning that grin on Andy. "That was a fun time, was it not, Andromache?" Andy snorted, and her body loosened and relaxed at the sight of her lover joking around. "You're suggesting we let them catch us?" Joe asked. Nikki canted his head to the side and studied Quinn. "She's suggesting we let them catch some of us." Quinn beamed a smile at him. Booker groaned, clearly having some idea where this was going and not being thrilled with the idea. Andy wasn't having any of it, though. "I'm not letting anyone lock you up ever again." Quinn laughed, a chiming, sweet thing that held just a hint of menace. She lifted a gentle hand to Andy's cheek. "Oh, no, I won't be the one allowing myself to get caught." An idea sprung to Niall's mind. "You don't think Copley knows about you? And if he contacted you guys before I came online, he probably doesn't know about me." Quinn's approval of Niall's ability to think quickly on her feet practically radiated off of her petite figure. "That makes sense. Quinn has been off the radar and basically lost a time. And Niall was just another crazy story about an MIA soldier lost overseas. The military would have sealed her medical records and covered up her disappearance pretty quick," Booker said, lost in thought. "Maybe that means Copley doesn't know about Nikki either. It has only been a few decades," Joe added in his input like a hopeful little boy begging for dessert before supper. Nikki gave him a sad smile. "He knew I was there in Marrakesh. He knew I had my scope trained on him. I'm sorry, my love, but even if he didn't, I would not let them take you anywhere without me right beside you." Joe gave his husband a pitiful pout, but accepted the truth in his Italian's words. Andy cast a heavy look at each of them. "So it's settled. Booker will get in touch with Copley, and we'll arrange it so we're put in the line of fire and get captured. Niall and Quinn will follow us to their headquarters, and we'll ride to the rescue, and together we will all burn their entire operation to the ground." Niall felt a sense of dread sink into her gut. She had a feeling the mission wasn't going to be nearly as simple as Andy made it out to be. Niall was still awake hours later, curled in her usual chair in front of the fireplace in Booker's office, when the Frenchman found her. She gratefully took the proffered hot mug from him and moaned when she smelled the creamy, rich, hot chocolate. But Niall paused before she took a sip and cast a wary glance up at Booker. Orgasmic coffee aside, the man could barely boil water without burning it. He was quick to reassure her, chuckling. "Don't worry. Nikki made it and set me up to deliver it to you. I think he knows that none of us were going to get any sleep tonight." Niall could only agree as she took a sip of the quite frankly gourmet hot chocolate. She had to close her eyes in bliss. It warmed her from the inside out better than any whiskey could. When she opened her eyes again, Booker was studying her. "You all right?" His question was soft. Niall scrunched up her brow. She could shrug the question off, but she had a feeling Booker could give her some insight to her internal dilemma. "Is this what we do? Is this who we're supposed to be?" Booker tilted his head, voicing his unspoken question, so Niall continued, "I didn't sign up for this." "Niall, none of us did." Niall shook her head and cut him off. That wasn't what she was getting at. "The day I died, I killed the guy that killed me." She looked down at her hands, where they were still wrapped around the hot mug in her lap. "They try to condition us, you know. Thousands of hours of training, 2 shots, quick kill. But they can't teach you how to live with it." "You have to feel it, Niall." Niall shook her head furiously in denial at his words. They may have been spoken in Booker's voice, but the words sounded a lot like Andy's. "You have to feel every one. That's what makes us still human." Niall squeezed her eyes shut against the tears that threatened to well up. "What about my family? They'll get old and I won't, but it'll be years before they realize that. I still have time with them." There was a long pause while Niall tried her hardest to fight back the tears burning in her eyes. Booker's quiet, reluctant voice broke through the heavy silence. "I had 3 sons. And the youngest one, Jean-Pierre, was the last one to die. He was 42 when cancer took him." Booker paused with a reluctance that spoke of pain and grief, and he looked at her with such a tired bearing that Niall could feel it weighing down on even her own shoulders. "The only way is forward now." "What do you mean?" Niall was almost scared of his answer. Booker had a way of showing her the ugly side of reality, and she wasn't sure she wanted to see it. "You'll always and forever be the young woman right there, but everyone around you." He drew in a long breath. "Everyone you love is going to grow old, is going to suffer, is going to die." Booker looked at Niall with such heartbreak written all over him that Niall knew without a doubt that this advice was gained through his personal experience. "And if you try to touch their lives, well, they would get to learn your secret." The flames in the fireplace caught on the tears that Booker tried to blink back. "They will beg you to share it with them, and you won't be able to. And they won't believe you, of course. And they will tell you that you don't love them, that your love is weak or selfish, and you will never forget the hate and the despair in their eyes. And you'll know what it is to lose everyone you've ever loved." Niall's heart absolutely shattered for the man who was sitting in front of her, so broken. The man who had been broken for the last 200 years with nothing but a dysfunctional found family there to patch together his pieces. Niall set down her mug, got to her feet, and moved to straddle Booker's lap so she could hug him tightly. His choked-off sobs cut Niall right down to her soul. Her heart hurt for the both of them. It hurt for Booker because he had only wanted to spend his life with his family. And it hurt for herself because she now knew that the best thing she could do was let her family go. Let their hearts break when they realized that she had died and then let them move on. They had done it once before. When her dad had died in combat, they would be able to do it again. It would be kinder than staying in their lives only to be a constant reminder of the time limit they had left with each other. When Booker's arms came up to wrap around her and he buried his wet face in her neck, Niall rested her cheek against his hair. She let herself cry, and she let herself mourn for the loss of both her family and Booker's. Maybe afterward, they could both start healing together. Chapter 3. That's all, folks. Less than a week later, they had a plan, and the six of them boarded a plane bound for England. Booker made contact with Copley and showed Andy the correspondence between them. It had been her idea to have Booker betray them. In the end, it would make Copley far less suspicious about Booker's sudden willingness to work with him, and would hopefully keep Copley from digging further into their histories and financials. They set the trap up at the safe house Andy had in northern Wales. It was an old, forgotten cabin lost in the Snowdonia National Park. The cabin was where she and Joe had stayed right after Quinn had been taken and cast into the ocean. Joe had found her there, and she had been an absolute inconsolable mess. The two of them had used that cabin, and really shack was probably a more apt description, as a base of operations while they spent the next 50 years searching the sea around England for any sign of Quinn. When they finally left, decades later, the two of them had boarded up the windows and hadn't been back since. Andy had barely even stepped foot in the United Kingdom in the last 400 years, and when she was forced to, it was with great reluctance. The six of them loaded up on enough supplies to get them through a few days and roughed it out to where the cabin was. This particular safe house was one Andy said she wouldn't mind seeing riddled with bullets. The wood and stone shack had clearly been used by various people camping or hunting in the park over the years, and that was probably the only reason the building was even still standing. It was extremely rudimentary with no plumbing. It had a well outside but no electricity, and a fireplace that was used to both heat the small shack, if only barely, and cook any meals. Nikki had used the small fireplace to make a stew that somehow ended up amazingly delicious. The cabin technically had two bedrooms but no actual usable beds, but it wasn't hard to divide up sleeping arrangements, as they had decided to sleep in shifts. Truthfully, the shack was barely a step up from camping in a tent, but it would only be for a few days. The next day, Booker confirmed that the ambush would be set for two nights from then, but because he was sure Copley was going to double-cross him, he expected the attack to happen the following night instead. "They will come early in the morning before dusk to case the area," Nikki stated, and Booker couldn't disagree with him. "But that's only if they're professionals. What kind of pharma CEO needs a team of professional mercenaries?" Niall asked with a scoff. Joe chuckled at her. "In this day and age? Most of them." They all agreed that Quinn and Niall would have an early dinner with them and then head deeper into the preserve to scout out the scouts. If the team Copley sent did in fact come before dawn to stake them out, there couldn't be any sign of more than four people staying in the cabin. It was nearly 3 o'clock in the morning when Niall heard an explosion. She and Quinn had hiked a little over a mile up an incline so they could see the light and smoke from the explosion. There were shouts and muffled gunshots. Niall had to bunch her fists around a handful of grass and roots to stop herself from getting to her feet and rushing down to help. She and Quinn had to stay well out of sight or risk them all getting captured. The other four all had trackers planted on them, and Booker had shown Niall how to use the GPS she had with her to track them. Quinn had tried to learn how to use the tablet as well, but had given up 10 minutes in and had wandered off bored with a muttered, "I do not need to know this. I will be too busy killing people to look at a computer screen." Niall and Booker just grinned at each other in amusement. The woman was slowly getting accustomed to the modern world, but the technology was still uncomfortable for her to handle. Hot showers, cars, and television Quinn was all for, but she still struggled to grasp the full extent of the internet and all of its resources. Personally, Niall thought Quinn was just metaphorically sticking her head in the sand to avoid thinking about it. She didn't dare say that out loud to Quinn, though. Niall had seen her with various weapons and knows exactly how proficient Quinn had become with a gun. Niall likes her head where it is, thank you very much. Quinn nudged her shoulder into Niall's in a gesture meant to comfort. Don't worry. We won't let Copley have them long. You and I will do whatever it takes to see them free. Niall felt the words bolster her up. What had Andy said when Niall had first asked about Quinn? She was a pit viper in a fight. It sounded like Niall had the best backup anyone could ask for when they were storming an enemy's fortress. When Booker woke up, he was on his side on the floor of a large bus. It had no windows and bench seats running along the walls. Nikki and Joe were slumped on the floor in front of him, and similar to Booker, they each had chains on their ankles and zip ties around their wrists. Joe started coughing himself back to consciousness, and Booker could feel Andy rousing awake against his back. He knew it was Andy from the sharp elbow digging into his spine. The woman was all sharp edges. Heavily armed security guards sat on the benches lining each wall of the bus. They were decked out in Kevlar and looked like something straight out of a movie about a SWAT team. They also outnumbered the four of them by 2-1. Booker just shook his head in disappointment. He had warned Copley. If this had been a real abduction and the four of them hadn't been pretty much playing along and basically let the goons capture them, there was still a fair amount of carnage left back at the cabin, but they had to make the kidnapping look real, and truthfully, Booker enjoyed watching Andy cut a swath through the mercs before the gas had caught up to all of them. In front of him, Joe sat up but slouched forward when the coughs from the noxious gas racked his body. He reached out questing fingers to brush Nikki, who still lay curled on his side unconscious. But before Joe's fingers even so much as brushed Nikki's arm, Joe was yanked back by one of the many guards sitting on the benches that lined the wall. Niccolo. Quiet, a guard ordered, his heavily booted foot lashing out to kick warningly at Joe's ankle. Booker blinked. Oh, great. A power-hungry macho idiot who got off on throwing his dominance around. What did Niall call it? Toxic masculinity? Booker tried his best to follow along on some of Niall's passionate rants, but he got easily distracted by the fire in her eyes. She was so very different from his wife. His wife had been sweet and soft-spoken, and Booker had loved her dearly, but there had never been any fire or passion burning behind her breastbone. And really, Booker had no idea that the fire that raged inside Niall was something he craved seeing. Passion for life, a zest for knowledge, and a single-minded drive to do everything at 100% effort and dedication. Niccolo, Desti, Desti. Joe's increasingly urgent voice brought Booker out of his musings of Niall. I said, the guard's voice rose angrily. Joe, however, looked right at the man, unfazed by all of the hate hovering menacingly over him. I know what you said. What are you going to do, kill me? When Joe refused to be cowed into submission, the clench of the guard's jaw spoke of nothing good. It hardly seemed to bother Joe, because he leaned forward toward Nikki again to repeat his plea for the Italian to wake up. Destati, destati, sono qui, sono qui. I am here, I am here. Nikki answered his husband's desperate pleas in a weak, breathy voice. His face was scrunched in pain, and he didn't open his eyes as he slurred his next words. Dovunque sia qui, wherever here is. Un furgone blindato hanno usato il gas. In an armored van, they used gas. Joe's response was quick, and Booker was able to follow the Italian only because he had spent decades with the two of them conversing around him. I told you, shut up! The same steroid-riddled asshole of a guard leaned forward menacingly. I need to know he's okay. Joe's sincere puppy eyes did nothing to soften the guard, which Booker actually gave the macho idiot credit for. Joe's puppy dog eyes were practically a lethal weapon. Booker had seen the man get given so many free things by vendors at almost every market or shop around the world because of those pitiful puppy eyes. "That's sweet. What is he, your boyfriend?" Nikki struggled to a sitting position, his eyes still scrunched closed in pain. When the guards smarmy, Booker absolutely blamed Niall for that one. Not once in his life had he ever used the word before he met the woman. Sneer and chuckle was directed around to the other guards, inviting them to join in on his ridicule of the bound, helpless prisoners. Booker could only sympathize with Nikki's tired sigh. He had been around the last 40 years, watching Nikki and Joe take the higher road and rise above countless assholes just like this. Even now, in a world that held so much awareness and acceptance, there were still people like this everywhere. Joe only took one look at Nikki's exhausted head shake and jumped to his husband's defense. "You're a child. An infant. Your mocking is thus infantile. He's not my boyfriend. This man is more to me than you can dream. He's the moon when I'm lost in darkness and the warmth when I shiver in cold. His kiss will still thrill me even after a millennia. His heart overflows with a kindness that this world is not worthy of. I love this man beyond measure and reason. He's not my boyfriend." Joe paused to draw in a shuddery breath and moved his eyes away from the guard whom he had been staring at, as if trying his best to implore this one man to try to understand the sheer magnitude of what love could actually be. Joe's eyes glistened when they moved to Nikki, and Nikki himself was holding his jaw tight, like he was fighting back his own set of tears. Booker could easily read the love and passion and devotion all over the both of them. God, he wanted that. Their relationship was something he greatly admired and prayed that one day he'd find something like it for himself. "He's all and he's more," Joe finished, his eyes staring deeply into Nikki's. A tiny thing of a smile curled the corner of Nikki's lips, and his voice was gravel when he responded to his husband's love confession. "You're an incurable romantic." Joe's smile glittered, and he leaned forward to meet Nikki for a hard kiss. The guards, who had been shocked into silence during Joe's speech, all looked around at each other, seemingly confused about what to do about the two men kissing passionately in front of them. Some of the guards, Booker counted 6, darted forward and roughly dragged Nikki and Joe apart. When Nikki's head hit the bench behind him due to the rough handling and he cried out, Joe lost it. Booker watched, stunned, for all of a second before Andy quickly shoved him into action. In less than a minute, all 8 guards in the bus with them were either dead or unconscious. The 4 of them half-heartedly checked the bodies for the keys to their cuffs, but found nothing useful. At least in that aspect, Copley wasn't a total dumbass. When they all casually sat back amongst the carnage, Andy smirked at Joe and Nikki, where they sat next to each other. "Nice speech, Joe. I'll have to use it on Quinn." Joe chuckled warmly and a little ruefully. "Thank you, thank you." Booker smiled at the people he called family and couldn't think of anywhere else he'd rather be. When the bus rolled to a stop and the back doors were opened from the outside, more armed guards and Copley were there to greet them. After bodies fell out of the open doors, Andy nonchalantly held up her bound wrists. "I don't suppose it would be possible to get the chains off of us." Judging from the furious shout of, "Get him out, get him out, get him on the plane," the cuffs were probably going to be staying on. "Guess not," Booker shrugged at Andy. Nikki and Joe were dragged off first. Nikki ignored the guards manhandling him to focus in on Copley. "We are usually a better judge of character." Booker huffed out a laugh. "Cheeky fucker." He and Andy were pulled out of the van and shoved into line behind Joe. As Booker shuffled toward the plane, he heard Nikki continue his rhetorical questions aimed to shake Copley's confidence. "I suppose you are taking us to the person who paid for your betrayal." As if they didn't already know. But Copley didn't know that they knew. When Joe was roughly shoved past Copley, Booker heard him say in a mocking admiration, "This is a nice plane." "There's a TV, Joe." Nikki's jovial statement came from inside the plane. Joe was shuffled up the plane steps when he quipped, "Champagne?" Booker grinned at Copley in great amusement as he himself was shoved by the ex-CIA agent. The look Copley shot the head of security, like he was overwhelmed, and just now seeing how in over his head he was, made Booker actually bark out a laugh. From Andy's cackle and her, "You haven't aged a day, Copley." Booker had a feeling that Copley was finally getting an inkling of what he had gotten himself into. Booker couldn't wait to see his face when their cavalry arrived. After a ridiculous introduction with the sadist masquerading as a CEO, Joe getting stabbed 10 times in the back and neck with a letter opener, and having the bastard watch in morbid fascination as Joe healed, Booker was beyond ready to get rescued. Andy had lunged forward and headbutted Merrick in retaliation. Booker had let out a howl of laughter at Merrick's shocked look at Andy's audacity. He received a gut punch from the butt of a rifle, but he deemed it well worth it. Merrick then quoted Shakespeare at them like the spoiled prep school kid he was, and then actually compared them to fucking lab rats, of all things. With Joe's muttered, "He called you a mouse, Nicky," and Nicky's subsequent cold, cutting stare aimed back at Merrick, Booker actually shuddered when the chills raced up his spine. The cold rage in those cerulean eyes only meant one thing, and Merrick better hope that Nicky never got free, because he wouldn't leave a single person in the building alive. They were all dragged down a few floors to what looked to be a private lab that was conveniently outfitted with chairs, designed to hold a person still. Once they were all strapped down, as securely as they could be, the female doctor, Kozak, who was also conveniently a sadist, same as Merrick, funny that, immediately started in on cutting the shirts off them. Merrick watched from the doorway with Copley as well as his head of security and a team of guards. Booker almost smiled. Copley was secure now, but that wouldn't keep him safe for long. Though to give the man a little credit, the ex-CIA agent was looking very guilty about his role in what would be their torture. Nikki's quiet voice cut into Merrick's boasting about the testing process and how securely he'd keep them locked away in his vault to keep them away from his competitors, the entitled fucker. All things die. Merrick immediately stopped his self-important tirade to turn his focus on Nicky. "What was that?" Merrick said it like, "How dare this little lab rat speak to me?" "Everything has to die, Mr. Merrick. The only reason we haven't is that it's not our time yet." Booker wanted to roll his eyes at his brother's zen-like approach, but he also knew that Nicky was saying what he was, the way he was, just to get under Merrick's skin. The Italian had a way of saying just the right thing, in just the right way, in just the right tone, to make you rethink your entire purpose in life, or thoroughly wig you out, sometimes both at once. It was like he could stare directly into your soul, and he found you lacking. "I would be surprised at what my products can do. I will carve slices off you for years to get what I want. Your time is coming." The way Merrick's eyes roved down Nicky's naked torso was the same way a butcher would look at a good cut of beef. It was more than a little disturbing. "As is yours," Nicky's quiet assurance definitely did to Merrick what it would have done to Booker. The CEO got a distinctly uncomfortable and unnerved look on his face, and he scurried out of the lab without a parting word. After the rest of them, Keene, Copley, and the rest of the guards, all filed out, Booker huffed out a breath and rolled his head to the left. "You are a creepy little shit, Nicky." Nicky's bark of laughter and the chuckles from Joe and Andy were more than enough to light a grin onto Booker's face. Over the next 24 hours, the four of them were subjected to large needles, open-heart surgeries, craniotomies, and one time, which Booker was the unfortunate recipient of, a full spinal dissection. They were given no sedatives or painkillers, and though they wouldn't have worked longer than a few minutes, the drugs had never even been administered once. Kozak said it would interfere with her results, but Booker highly suspected that it was more like she liked seeing how far she could push their pain threshold before their healing took over. The answer had been terrifying. The good doctor had watched fascinated, as after she removed Joe's heart, she had kept his chest cavity open with wide metal clamps for more than an hour. Joe's heart had regrown, but the exposure from the open cavity had him dying and reviving in excruciating pain over and over again. Nikki had looked absolutely feral with rage. Booker had heard him growling under his breath, and his clenched fist didn't relax until after Kozak had removed the clamps and walked over to him. Though Joe remained dead in his chair, his chest was healing closed rapidly, and Booker saw Nikki breathe a sigh and visibly relax in his bonds. When Kozak stuck a rather large needle into Nikki's kidney, the Italian just gritted his teeth and bore it. Remarkable. The doctor caressed Nikki's side like a kid would reach out in fascination, yearning to touch something long dead at a museum.
"You will not be able to give him what he wants," Nikki gasped out roughly, his chest still heaving.
"You think I go too far? That I am unethical?" Kozak's question was light, like she was amused and humoring him.
Nikki just seemed tired when he answered her. "I would say immoral."
"I believe this can change the world." She held up a glass vial filled with his organ samples as she said it. She said it so assuredly that Booker almost believed that she believed it herself.
"A fine justification. I have heard it so many times before."
Nikki was quick to retort, and though he said it in a soft voice, his tone very clearly said, "You're just like every self-serving, hypocritical piece of crap out there. Eat shit and die." The good doctor definitely caught the implied meaning behind Nikki's words, because she looked a little too unsettled to think of a response. She picked up a few of the vials filled with more tissue and organ samples and walked out. Joe gasped awake, and had Booker not known that he had just come back from being dissected, Booker might have believed that Joe had just woken up from a nightmare. He, Andy, and Nikki silently turned their heads to watch Joe's eyes wildly dart around to each of them before landing back on Nikki. He sagged in relief when he saw Nikki awake and watching him impassively.
"As much as I like watching you sleep, I am glad you are awake."
"Bedhead?" was Joe's flirty retort. Nikki's laugh and snort, as always, brought a smile to Booker's face. A quick glance to Andy showed her eyes closed like she was trying to take a nap, but a fond grin was on her face as well.
"Nicely tousled."
Nikki had barely stopped laughing when he said it. Joe's answering chuckle made it clear that he was proud of himself for getting Nikki to laugh so hard that he snorted. After they settled and the quieter atmosphere returned, Nikki turned his head away to stare at the ceiling.
"You know, I was thinking about Malta."
Joe seemed curious when he asked,
"What time in Malta?"
Booker couldn't see Nikki's expression when he rolled his head to look back at Joe, but from the slow, seductive smile that crossed Joe's face, Booker could very well guess what memory they were thinking of.
"Oh, that time in Malta." Joe's slow drawl was husky with lust.
Booker rolled his eyes and actually groaned under his breath. It just figured that the two of them would be flirting right now. He guessed if the back of a van where they had all been held chained and captured wasn't off limits, then the lab where they were all being dissected and tortured seemed like the perfect time and place to flirt with your husband. Nikki turned his head to look back up at the ceiling, and his next whispered words were in Italian.
"Dovremmo tornare lì."
We should go back there. Joe's wistful response was so filled with fondness and love, Booker had found himself tearing up a little.
Sarebbe bello.
It would be nice. It was so hard to think that the two of them had only been together for 40 years. If Booker hadn't known them, and had to have guessed, he would have assumed they had met at the same time during the Crusades, and knowing them like he did, they would have probably spent a few months killing each other over and over before falling into bed and right into love. Booker had known Joe for 150 years before they had found Nikki, but he honestly couldn't imagine one without the other. Booker didn't even want to think of that happening to either one of them. He knows Joe fears it. Every time he gasps awake from a death, he doesn't calm down until he sees Nikki awake and breathing. When Nikki was killed, Joe always hovers at his side, holding his breath until Nikki draws in a breath after reviving. Nikki's first instinct on waking was to find Joe's eyes or to reach out for him if Joe was within arm's reach. It would be a heart-wrenching day if they were ever separated permanently. Booker squeezed his eyes shut against the thought. Quinn and Niall would get them out. Booker knew they would, but he couldn't stop the what-if that snuck its way into his thoughts. It wasn't long after that when they heard alarms blaring through the labs. Niall half-staggered, half-fell into the lab with a handgun in one hand. "Niall!" Nikki brightened when he saw their youngest member. Andy wasted no pleasantries when she demanded, "Where's Quinn?" Niall made a beeline for Andy, rushing to unbuckle one of her wrists before moving over to Booker. There were several bursts of rapid gunfire behind the closed doors Niall had just come through, and she rushed around the beds to free Nikki's wrist and then Joe's. Andy was on her feet before Booker had even finished undoing the buckles around his ankles. "Quinn got distracted. I think she likes the automatic rifles a little too much. We can go help her as soon as you're all free." "That's my girl." Andy's smile was edgy but fond as she regarded the gunfire still going off behind the doors. Without looking, Andy held out her hand towards Niall, and Niall slapped a gun into her open palm. Booker rolled off the bed and caught the affectionate forehead touch that Nikki and Joe exchanged before the three of them grabbed a set of scrub tops from the closet in the corner. Andy had been the only one lucky enough to escape with her shirt unscathed. "Time to go, guys," Niall urged, seemingly uneasy about leaving Quinn without backup for too long. Nikki pulled the scrub shirt over his head as he said, "I want the doctor." His tone brooked no argument, and Andy nodded sharply at his request. "You and Joe go find her. The rest of us will go after Merrick, and then we'll regroup and find Copley together." "Actually, Copley helped Quinn and I get into the building. He gave us key cards and codes." Andy looked at Niall in askance, and Niall continued, "I think he regrets what he did. Maybe not the why of it, but definitely the how." "You trust him?" Joe asked her, valuing her honest opinion on how she read Copley's intentions and actions. "Maybe not totally, but he definitely won't stop us from escaping. He might even be a valuable contact in the future. We'll have to pay him a visit after this." Booker nodded his agreement as he stepped up to Niall. "Good enough for me." Andy lifted her chin in acceptance. "Let's go." Nikki and Joe parted away from the rest of them to search out Dr. Kozak. Andy, Booker, and Niall worked their way through the guards, some alive but a lot of them dead, on their way up to the penthouse. They found Quinn among literal blood and gore right outside the heavy locked doors that led to the uppermost floor. Nikki and Joe joined them just a few minutes later, covered in concrete dust. The back of Nikki's hair was caked in still wet blood, and was that bits of skull and brain matter? Judging from Joe's clenched jaw, he was barely holding his rage inside from whatever had happened to Nikki. "Did you get her?" Andy asked. Nikki gave a jerky nod. Joe ground out, "Keen, the head of security, intercepted us after. He used the fucking gas and then shot Nikki. He got away." Before Joe could get too worked up, Nikki cut in. "We think he retreated back to Medic." Andy grimaced but nodded. "What do you think, Oslo 67? Booker asked. "What happened in Oslo in 1967? Niall inquired. Andy just gave her a secretive little smile. 1867. And no, let's do Sao Paulo 84. Niall's with me." Nikki handed Andy one of the guns he had collected. "What happened in Sao Paulo 84? Andy's little smile turned into a full-blown smirk. "You'll see." When all of the dust cleared, when Niall saw Joe lay a rather impressive helping of whoop-ass on Keen, she just raised both eyebrows at Joe's, "You shot Nikki, you shouldn't have done that." How one man could be so enraged, yet sound so calm, was remarkable. When Merrick lay in a broken heap on top of his expensive car, parked on the street 30 floors down from the penthouse, when Niall staggered out of the remains of the car, it was surrounded by her new family. Nikki's, "It's okay, Niall," was soft and reassuring. Booker's, "Give me your hand," was accompanied by him taking her proffered arm to wrap around his neck. He eased his own arm around her waist to help support her while her bones cracked back into place. Andy and Quinn stepped up to her with happy smiles. Andy raised the hand that wasn't already wrapped around Quinn's shoulders to cup the back of Niall's neck in such a fond, affectionate gesture that the last little part of Niall that remained unsure about where she fit into the group finally eased and relaxed. They all piled into the SUV that Niall and Quinn had jacked on their way from the cabin in Wales. Andy and Quinn claimed the driver's and front passenger seats while Joe and Nikki climbed into the far back third row. Niall opened her mouth to offer to climb back there herself instead of having two tall men cram into the third row, but from the way Nikki folded himself and pressed into Joe, and the way Joe wrapped both arms around Nikki, Niall could safely assume the two of them preferred the tight quarters. Niall slid herself in next to Booker and sagged into him when he wrapped an arm around her shoulders to hold her securely. She was just exhaling out the last of her tension when she felt his lips barely graze the top of her hair. "Get some sleep, Niall. I've got you." She could do nothing but acquiesce. As she closed her eyes and drifted off, she listened to the soft Italian murmurs behind her and the hushed, happy laughter in front of her. It was the rumble of Booker's chest against her ear as he responded to something Quinn said that eased her all of the way down into a deep sleep. Knowing that she was surrounded by this newfound family and acknowledging the feeling of safety and belonging for the first time since before her father died when she was a kid, Niall was content in her certainty that the five people in the car with her would do everything in their power to keep her safe and happy for what Niall hoped was a very, very long time for all of them. Finite.